I'm Stella.
And I'm Graham Wheeler Nelson.
And you're listening to
Anything But Spielberg.
Okay.
So, I heard Joe Rogan said another transphobic comment on his most recent podcast.
Yeah, because Joe Rogan's a transphobe.
Yeah, it's not surprising at this point. It's not
He's even... I think he said actually a lot of transphobic stuff before. I'm going to look up Joe Rogan transphobia.
I'm sure that's going to be a multi-page return. That's like on Google where it's like so many billion returns.
Spotify battles with staff alleging transphobia in Joe Rogan experience.
Well, obviously. Well, and it's good that they're like fighting back and filing against it. But, I mean...
Apparently Caitlyn Jenner said she hates Joe Rogan and he's a transphobic ass. Which, like, okay, cool, but, like, didn't, like...
Caitlyn Jenner is not one to take the takes from.
Yeah. Like, I agree, but, like, also the source.
Isn't she, like, a huge Trump fan?
I think she was, right?
That's absurd. Like, I get that, like, how you can be transgender Caitlyn and also be a Trump fan. But it's really sad when that actually happens, where it's, like... All of your cohorts and your, like, quote-unquote, like, the people on your side hate you.
Yeah.
Like, that's so sad.
Yeah, no, I mean, and, like, you think about, like, I don't know, like, in the South, like, Black Southern Trump supporters, or, like, Mexican Trump supporters especially, where it's, like, this guy is, like, fully saying that he, like, doesn't think you deserve rights.
Yeah.
Like, why?
It's so sad. And, like... how can you help, too? Because it's like, you want to just go in there and be like, this is the right thing to think.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do that. Like, I don't know what the...
No, because
I don't know. Shit's fucked. So, Joe Rogan?
Yeah, bad.
Have you seen anything else on Joe Rogan recently? Anything fucked up?
Oh, yeah. Did I already say this on podcast or not? The thing about Spotify?
Oh, the genres? I think that was before podcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, so if you go on Spotify and you, like, go to the different genres, there's, like horror, like, true crime, wellness, and then, like, just Joe Rogan. Like, just a full Joe Rogan genre.
He's a genre unto himself.
I hate that.
That's ugly. Ugly. Very ugly.
Like, I just think, like, he's a terrible podcaster. From a podcaster standpoint, I think he's not good.
And we were also talking about this. It's way too much content. Like, you cannot expect everybody or anybody to keep up with that. Like, 3 hours every single day?
I like go in periods listening to a lot of podcasts and no podcasts, and I'm in a lot of podcasts right now.
Ooh.
But I've been listening to a lot of true crime podcasts.
Ooh. Like what? Like real shit?
Yeah. I like the ones that do like a whole season of one case rather than like serial ones.
Yeah.
So I think the problem is with a lot of true crime podcasts is there's the good ones that use it as like a way to criticize law enforcement, and then like the bad ones who use it as a way to like glorify law enforcement. And I'm on kind of like a more glorifying one right now. But it's like I'm really interested in the case, so I have to stick with it.
What's the case?
The Delphi murders.
Ooh. Where were they and when?
Delphi, I think it's in Indiana, somewhere Midwest. But it was like these two girls, like 14-year-old girls, and they like just went out like broad daylight into like this like national park area that's like usually pretty populated and stuff. And they were both like brutally murdered, and they have the guy like on like camera and like an audio recording of his voice, because like the girl, like one of the girls took a Snapchat video of him, and they still can't figure out who the fucking guy is. And I'm like, so, like, obviously law enforcement's at fault here. Like they have to be in that case.
Yeah.
But, like, they're very much like, these officers are doing as much as they can. I'm like, are they really, though?
What the fuck? There's video of it? That's insane.
There's not video of the murder, but there's, like, video of a guy, like, coming
what
after
the
them,
fuck?
I think.
Fuck. And is it still unsolved, like, to this day?
Yeah. Well, it happened in, like, 2017. So, like, it's been, I guess, yeah, it's, like, what? I can't do math. 4 years?
That's fucked up.
Yeah. No, it is really messed up. It's sad.
Did you ever see that documentary on Netflix where it was, like, true crime, like, from security cam footage? It was, like, came out during the pandemic, and it was, like,
no.
The dad killed his wife and child, and, like, like stashed it in like an oil like
no barrel. I watched a lot of Unsolved Mysteries this summer. Ooh. Those were good.
Like with the one with the UFO, that show.
I did watch
that episode, and that was a weird one.
That wasn't my favorite episode. The first one's really interesting.
Was that the one in France or something?
Oh, that
like
one
that?
Was interesting too. No, it's like the one of the dude who like just disappears one day. Like he has like a weird moment with like his, where he's like, I'm getting out of here, like with his family. Like he was like on the run or something, and then he like just disappeared, and then they found like his body through like a hole in like a garage, so like he fell through the roof into like this office area. But then, like, there's no place he could have jumped from anywhere near there. So it's like, how did that happen?
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's fucked up. And I don't like unsolved shit because I need that resolution.
The other thing with that is that after he disappeared, his wife, like, found a bunch of stuff in his office about, like, the Freemasons.
What?
And so, like, there's, it's so crazy. What the fuck happened there?
You're blowing my mind right now. Like, I'm
you should really watch that.
That
episode. It's crazy.
Is that there are two seasons?
That's
on
like
there?
Season one, episode one.
Oh, wow.
It was bonkers.
That's so creepy. And like, it's so like, you don't ever get like the resting well feeling you get at the end of a solved crime.
No.
Like, you're just left empty.
But I like the unsolved stuff because it's like, you know, good science fiction almost. Like, you let your brain wander.
It's a good take.
Which is kind of morbid because it is real people, but like.
Yeah, but it's exciting. And in these modern days, we need to have some excitement.
It's pretty exciting. What got us to your conversation?
What's your podcasts and the true crime podcasts and. I have been listening to no podcast. Well, actually, the Brattle Bookshop has a podcast that I've been
really
listening to. I just found out about it because they stuck it in one of my books, and it's not that good, but it's the old guy who runs it, and he's like, hey, this is what it takes to sell a book. And it's like, okay, I'll listen. I'll give it a shot. And so that's exciting.
And I'm really impressed that you have the patience to listen to the Brattle Bookshop's podcast.
I love the Brattle Bookshop, though. It's almost like I have, like, a duty to listen to it.
As a fan.
Yes, yes. I need to get invested.
No, that's valid. Just the True Crime podcast, so sexy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's such a good format, too, because it's like a good, like, oh man, you're sitting around the fire. You're just like,
yeah.
Yeah, you're soaking it up. And it's like suspenseful. It doesn't reveal much.
I just remembered I was listening to this one like a couple months ago that I didn't like because I hated the guy like doing it. Because he was like the most cliche fucking like grizzled detective, like, or investigative journalist, like, who's like, he said he solved murders before, and he's
come
just
on,
like,
come on.
like, he, the most like trench coat, like, looking ass motherfucker.
What the fuck? Do you remember that guy who worked in City Place, the detective who we were going to do?
Oh my god, Sham Shack!
Yes, Sham Shack! If Detective Sham Shack, if you're listening, we still want to do a documentary on you or a true crime podcast.
So some context here. Graham and I think Calder.
Yep, maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I think Calder was there too. We were like, I don't even think we were stoned then. I think we were like stone cold sober, and we're like, wouldn't it be cool if we were detectives? And we're like, we're in film school, we can't be detectives. And then
but like legitimately, it would be so cool to solve crimes.
Yeah.
And to be like in Wish You Were Never Here, We Were You Never Here.
You were never really
you
here.
You were never really here. It would be cool to be involved in the seedy underbelly.
Yeah. No, I think it would be very cool, but we're not qualified. So we're like, what's the next best thing? We'll make a documentary about the detective solving a crime, and then it'll feel like we solved the crime. And then we like reached out to a guy and we're like, hey, can we do a documentary of you? And he was like, no.
Yeah, he turned us down.
But his name was like Philip Sham Shack or some shit.
It was like Dick Sham Shack or something powerful like that.
But like that was... That's like a very, like, that is exactly the name I would expect him to have.
Yes, it's like, you could only go into this profession, sir. And he worked next door to Emerson College. Yeah. Like, literally, I could see his office.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, so...
if you're listening,
yeah, if you can make this happen, our lovely listeners.
Wait, that could be our BA is just Sham Shack. One word, Sham Shack.
And if he doesn't agree to it, we'll get an actor. We'll do it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And then we'll just get so fucking sued.
We probably would, because he's probably got a trademark on that. Yeah. It's like his business.
No, yeah, you're just right.
But, anywho.
Lynn Ramsey.
Wonderful director. Hang on, I want to double check my audio settings really quick. And I didn't clap, so let me clap now. As long as we're both still recording.
Yeah,
we'll tail
yeah.
slate, okay? Great.
Good clap.
You ever hear about this woman, Lynn Ramsey?
Most have not.
And it's a shame. It's a damn shame, because yeah. She's a fucking badass director.
Dude, I think You Were Never Really Here was the first thing I saw of hers, and I was like, this is fantastic. Why haven't more people seen this? And then I watched We Need to Talk About Kevin, and I was like, oh my God, so good.
I watched We Need to Talk About Kevin first, like 2 days ago, yesterday, and then I watched You Were Never Really Here today. And both of them, fucking outstanding movies.
Yeah.
Especially compared to the shit we've watched this season. Like, it's so refreshing to get an actually good
director.
We
really needed to do a female director after we did Lars von Trier.
Yes, yes.
To, like,
and Zack Snyder.
Yeah, honestly. Oh, also, I watched the Snyder Cut.
Ugh. How was that?
It was really, really bad. Holy shit.
I could have told you that.
No, I could have too. But like, Luke wanted to watch it, and I was like, you know, it'll be fun to make fun of. But it was like, and I think I wouldn't be as upset about it if like so many people weren't like, this is the most amazing superhero movie ever made. And it's like, okay, like you're wrong. You're wrong, actually.
It's so sad that so many people think those are good movies.
Yeah.
Like that makes me lose faith in the art.
But like here's the thing, Zach. You have to cut things out of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like just as a rule, like it's something that happens when you make movies, and he's just like, no, I'm gonna leave everything in. And so that there's so many parts that fucking drag. Also, this movie is roughly 70% exposition, and they do it all like, it's all dialogue exposition.
Ugh. Yeah, that's awful. And one thing that Lynn Ramsey does so great is she edits her movies, well, I don't know if she does, but someone does, to 90 minutes. Which is needed in a movie. It's so refreshing.
Dude, 90
it's
minutes.
So nice.
Literally, I don't know who's against... Why are people making movies so fucking long?
It's the perfect length for a movie.
90 minutes is what movies are supposed to be.
It's perfect. A painting is two-dimensional. And a movie is 90 minutes.
Yes.
Because that's the movie added dimension, is time. And so you better be smart with how you work with it.
Exactly.
And it's perfect.
I think people like the Snyder Cut because it's like... like everything is spelled out for you.
Yeah.
So if you're like kind of stupid
or not paying attention at all.
Yeah. Well, people are like slow sometimes. And it's like, if you are not used to like following more complicated movies, then it's like, yeah, this might be good. Maybe, but okay. Whatever.
If you don't watch many movies or read many books or say many words or talk to many people.
I just like there was this one moment in it where like I don't even remember what the thing was. Or wait, no, there was like this stupid MacGuffin in the whole movie, like about these like boxes or whatever.
I don't think I even got to that part, and I watched like an hour and a half of the movie.
It's like the little fantasy boxes, and so like they like. There's like one scene, and I don't even know which character it was. It might have been one of the new ones. But like, like they were like, where's the box? And then the character walks up from behind holding the box. And then he goes like, I have the box. And it's like, you didn't need to say I have the box. It was in your hand.
Show, don't tell. That's like the first rule you learn on like the forums.
And it was just like there's so much like that where it's like little things that it's like, why would you do that?
And so he cut characters? He added characters? New characters?
No, it was like other DC characters added to like the whole team.
I'll cut that part.
But yeah, it was just...
That sounds really awful.
It was...
just so bad.
It, like, you can... It's in... I think it would be interesting, like, because I'm not, like, the biggest superhero movie person, but, like, Batman and Superman are interesting in the sense that, like, they both have, like, moral dilemmas at their core, because, like, Batman's not really a good person, and, like, Superman's kind of a god, like, he shouldn't have that much power, like, that kind of thing, but, like, you could dive into that, and that would be, like, kind of interesting, but instead you're just like, ooh, superheroes, look at them do superhero shit, and it's like, I don't care, like I just don't care.
Yeah, it's so superfluous.
Yes,
I don't know if I pronounced that right.
You didn't. But it's the thought that mattered.
Thank you. But it's all surface level, and it's all just look at the carnage, and like he's almost on the verge of some good takes. Like that Batman or that Superman is like an alien and a god, and like he's fucking shit up in these movies, and he could have had a good potential jumping off point of like, let's have some good takes here. But instead it was more like it was playing with action figures.
Yes. Very good way to put it. And like there were so many fucking shots that's like, look at all of them standing there. They're all together. Look at this. It's like a poster, right? And then like they spend like 5 minutes on that.
Jesus. And like, were there as many, I'm going to try that again. Were there as many quick quips as in the one that I saw a couple clips of?
No, I wouldn't say like there's like
really, quips,
like jokes.
Yeah.
There really weren't as many as it like seemed to be.
It still didn't help it. Didn't make it good.
No. It was just like, don't spend 4 hours of your life watching that, please.
Like, that blows my mind that is a 4-hour movie.
I like saw some Letterboxd review that was like, I've watched it 3 times.
That's like 16 hours.
Go outside. Like, do something else.
Like, the weather's coming. Like, it's getting nice out. Like, it's getting to April. Like, the sun's coming out. Daylight savings. Go on a bike ride. Like, just stand in the sun for a little bit. Just stand there. Like, it doesn't really matter what you do.
Ugh. Just get some vitamin D, you know?
Or just, like, consume better media at the very least.
But, like, so I looked through, like, the good Letterboxd reviews, and, like, they were all just done by people who have, like, never seen, like, any movie other than, like, superhero movies. And it's like, okay, well...
That makes me want to throw up. Like, that even that there's people who do that. Like, and they think that they care about movies so much that they write Letterboxd reviews, and they think people are going to care about their opinion on the Snyder Cut. Like, that's why I don't do shit on Letterboxd, and Corey has been trying to plug his Letterboxd every chance we see him. And, like, every movie we watch together, he's like, oh, this is what my Letterboxd review is going to be while we're watching the movie. I'm like, why don't you wait till we finish the movie to get your Letterboxd review figured out? Like, that's my philosophy with watching movies.
I only leave reviews on Letterboxd if it's like something mean or funny.
And I think I left a review on 2 movies right when I first got my Letterboxd.
I actually haven't opened my Letterboxd in a while because I was a little mean on my review to the Snyder Cut. I said anybody who likes this should be chemically castrated.
That's a good insult.
Which, should... like, I feel like I might have gotten some hate on.
Did you receive any hate mail?
That's what I'm looking up right now.
I also haven't used Letterboxd in a long time. I just forget to log shit. But I have watched a lot of movies this recently, in like the past 6 months, let's say. Especially like because of the podcast. And good movies, too, now recently with these Lim Ramsey movies.
Yeah.
But you get any hate mail?
No, I actually got 2 likes, so...
Oh, hey, well...
Faith restored.
Well, that's... what a relief.
I feel like it's a better judge, like, when looking for movies, it's a better judge than, like, IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I do the list function, where it's like...
The lists are really fun.
And, like, the wish list.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, the I want a watch list. I use that for just, like, to store... movies.
I'm so bad at updating mine is the thing.
Yeah, me too.
I make yearly lists and that's like about it.
Yeah. I don't make real lists. It's just like the watch.
Yeah. I only make the yearly list because it like encourages me to watch a bunch of movies from like the year. So I'm like caught up by the end of
the year.
That's
such a good idea. Because also I feel like other than what movies Corey has made me watch, I haven't seen any movies this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones I have seen haven't been that good.
Let me pull up what I got so far.
But I did like watch Minari the other night and it was really, really good.
I liked Minari a lot.
I liked it. I thought it was really beautiful. And a good use of subtitles, and like a lot of times you don't like, I get that they were talking English, but like you don't need the subtitles.
Yeah. That, ooh, good point.
Because that's what I hate about Corey is that he makes us turn on the subtitles for every fucking movie because he doesn't pay attention at all, and so he needs his subtitles apparently. And so, like, and your eye is constantly, like, up and down, up and down. Like, it's an awful way to watch a movie.
I don't mind subtitles. I feel like we talked about this last podcast.
Yeah.
Nomadland was really good.
Yeah. My mom said it was really good,
too. Yeah, I liked it a lot. Pieces of a Woman is with Shia LaBeouf, so don't watch it on Netflix.
So that's with Shia LaBeouf?
Yeah, it was, like, it was really fucking sad. It was a very sad movie. The Little Things was terrible. Like real bad.
Oh no.
It was with Denzel Washington and Rami Malek and Jared Leto. Also
Rami Malek?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Fuck Jared Leto, also pirate this movie.
Ah! Yeah, I feel like also like what a great Joker. Like awful Joker, but great actor, like but awful. So let me get what I'm trying to say out. Joaquin Phoenix, great actor, terrible Joker. Jared Leto, awful actor, awful Joker. The Venn diagrams don't intersect.
That's a really good point.
Thank you.
Wait, what were we just talking about?
Our watch list.
Oh, The Little Things. Yes. Horrible movie. It was trying to be Seven. It was literally just trying to like do Seven, but like.
Seven with, no, you can't do Seven. That's already done. And it's like, you can't imitate the biggest guy on the scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what are you doing? What are you trying to do?
Also, like, Jared Leto's a rapist. Don't support him.
Oh, no, is he really? Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, definitely pirate that one. Or don't even watch it, honestly.
Just don't watch it.
Is that Pieces of a Woman?
No, that was The Little Things.
Oh, The Little Things.
And Pieces of a Woman was the one with Shia LaBeouf.
Okay.
Which, like, also don't support.
Yeah, I don't support it.
And then I watched, like, some shit movies, too.
Yeah. I'm Thinking of Ending Things, I think, was the best movie that came out last year.
I think that was my number one actually last year.
Also, I just watched Ma Rainey's Black Bottom on Netflix. It was really good. It was like a play. I think it was a Tennessee Williams play. It was whoever wrote Fences, not Tennessee Williams.
Oh.
Whoever that is.
But, I knew all this stuff in AP Lit.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
Yeah, my first one was The Little Things, or not fucking Little Things.
I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Yeah, my first one was I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
So many things.
And then my second one was She Dies Tomorrow. I thought that was really cool.
She Dies Tomorrow?
Yeah. Ooh, I think you would like mysterious. It. It's kind of weird.
I'm going to write it down. But speaking of dying tomorrow.
Lynn Ramsey.
Lynn.
Yes.
Lin-Manuel Miranda Ramsey. So what a wonderful director. What an amazing director to have picked. I really liked both of these movies. Stella, can you tell me a little bit about her general background history?
So she was born to a working class family in Glasgow.
Which we love.
Scotland.
Love to see it.
For those who don't know, she used to paint and then just studied photography at Edinburgh's Napier College before graduating in cinematography and directing from the National Film and Television School.
Which is badass, damn.
Yeah.
And I feel like having that base of photography like makes her such a much more competent visual director where she doesn't really rely on dialogue.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of visual shit that's communicating.
And like all the composition's amazing too, yes. So it's like that kind of comes through.
Yes. And even with like simple shit, you're like, wow, like damn.
And there's not a lot of info on her Wikipedia page. Like, there's literally one sentence on her early life and, like, before her career, which is really sad because on Zack Snyder, it was, like, 10 pages worth. It was not necessary.
But, yeah, she's, like, a much lesser-known director, so I think that it's, like... I don't know, but there aren't a lot of known women directors.
Exactly, and these are two fucking awesome movies. She's won a ton of awards. Like, she came out of the gate with awards.
I'd say, like, the biggest female director right now is probably Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. Pretty Women, or Little Women. With Little Women. I mean, that is a huge movie. I would agree. She's probably... And she's a fast climber, too.
She's a fast climber, yeah.
Yeah.
Catherine Bigelow's kind of not relevant anymore.
What did she do?
Hurt Locker.
Yeah. Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty.
And that Detroit something. Detroit in the black people. And I'll cut that out. But yeah, she... maybe it's because she's a woman that they don't have a lot of info on her. Like, I'm thinking the people who run
that, like,
Wikipedia.
I said that, jokingly, but, like, maybe.
Yeah, because, like, honestly, it's a bunch of, like, neckbeard nerds who write shit on Wikipedia. Like, who else is, like, going into Wikipedia and editing shit except, like, white nerds?
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, Lynn Ramsey, some woman director who, like, Kevin, we need to talk about him? I don't think so. So this is a fun fact we found, a pretty fun fact. This is
an early fun fact.
Yes, a teaser. But it's also not that fun and a little risque for this podcast. So she was going to direct The Lovely Bones in 2001, but it got quote unquote caught in the creative differences when the book became a bestseller. And so in 2004, Steven Spielberg acquired the rights and she was dropped, and then they hired Peter Jackson. And even in the article that I read this in quotes or in parentheses, it said that this movie, but directed by Peter Jackson, was poorly received. Poorly received.
Yeah, we were talking pre-podcast about this, but it was like, I remember seeing like trailers for The Lovely Bones when I was like a young kid, and that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, and like I said pre-podcast, it's like right around that time when you're like really starting to think about death, and you're like,
yeah,
oh fuck, like people die, like people, your grandparents die, everyone dies, I'm gonna die. And then you see this movie and it's like, goddamn, this kid died. And then I didn't see the movie, but if you saw the movie, you would have realized it was a really shitty movie. And so I'm glad I didn't see it.
I just like, I was so afraid of getting kidnapped as a kid.
I still am. like I said to Stella the other night, I smoked a doobie and I got a little too high, and I was walking to Insomnia Cookies to eat some cookies. And I got really paranoid, and I was like, everyone I passed, I was like, are they following me? Like, are they going to stab me and rob me of my no cash? Like, what if they come up and they're like, give me your money, and I don't have any cash? And I'm like, I got nothing. And then they're like, ah, fuck you. Stab, stab. And I just got so scared, but nobody did. That was fine. Like, I think I saw family rolling a stroller.
I'm just get afraid of, like, being human trafficked.
Yeah. My mom always warned me about that, and she was
I feel like it's a big thing in the Midwest.
I feel like it's a big thing everywhere. I feel like it's a bigger thing in the bigger cities.
Yeah, it probably is. It's like weird because it's so scary because it's like it happens like in much higher volumes than you'd think it would.
Yeah.
And like that's freaky.
Yeah, it's really horrifying just to think that like you could just get snatched off the sidewalk and just be gone. And like you can't run away. You can't kill yourself. Like they've got you under their thumb. Like, that is horrifying. And then you're lost. They take you to a secondary location.
Once you're at the... Wait, isn't there, like, a John Mulaney bit about this? Yeah. Always talking about the second location.
Throwing my money clip across the room.
You want it? Go get it. God, I love John Mulaney.
Me too. I hate human trafficking. Not to make light of human trafficking or anything. But
I feel like Kristen and I almost got human trafficked in Pierrot once.
Holy shit.
I forget what exactly the thing was, but like we like were waiting in the lobby for like DoorDash or something. And there were these two dudes just like sitting in the lobby. And then they like went up to us and like were trying to get us like in their car, which was like not very chill.
Not how DoorDash works.
They weren't DoorDash people. We were downstairs for DoorDash, but they were like just chilling in the lobby. I don't know.
That's so scary.
Greasy, yeah.
I not to talk about pot again, but I bought pot from this one guy. It was a while ago, but
degenerate stoner.
And it was the first time I was buying from this guy, and so I was a little uneasy. And I went down, and it was like one of these delivery type deals where they just drive up to the curb and you just get it. Mm-hmm. And I went up to him, and he was like, "Get in." And I was like, "I can't really say no at this point." And so I got in and I was like, I hope we're not going to drive away. And luckily he didn't. He was like, okay. So what's up? What's your major?
This dude is like way too fucking dramatic for like how illegal pot is right now. Like, cause it's acting like you're fucking dealing meth or something. Like, yeah. Get in my car. We can't let the coppers see this one.
It was at like 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, like outside of P Row. Like it was like people were standing out there.
But like weed's pretty much legal here.
Exactly. And I bought weed previous to that, which was a long time ago, from this other delivery guy who just like threw it at me, like out the window. And like, I didn't even have a chance to like really grab it. I was like, whoa, he's going fast. And then I saw another kid who did the same thing, like 100 feet up, like at the 2B alley. And I pointed, I was like, we're twinning. And they weren't having it. And so I was like, okay, never mind.
I feel like that's a nice gesture.
Me too. I thought I was being nice, but they didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was weird. But that was when I felt like I might have been potentially human trafficked.
So human trafficking sucks.
Yeah, I agree.
Just like in You Were Never Really Here.
Exactly. We were going to tie it in. We got to tie it in to Lynn Ramsey's amazing movie that we'll talk about specifically in a little bit.
Yeah.
But both were very good movies. Do you want to talk about our impressions of her work in general?
After watching the Snyder Cut, this is like I needed this. This is like the anti-Snyder Cut.
Yes, it's such a relief to finally watch good fucking movies.
Yeah.
Because also I feel like for my film classes and for Corey, I have not been watching good shit in my brain. Like also our Corey's friend is making us watch The Crown, which... I don't know if you've seen The Crown.
No, I don't. I know I wouldn't be interested in it.
Yeah, me too. And then she was like, we were like halfway into an episode. I'm like, as soon as this episode ends, I'm going to bed. And I did. But right before it ended, she's like, oh, maybe after this we can watch Downton Abbey. And I was like, I'm not watching any fucking Downton Abbey, okay?
Downton Abbey's just like a soap opera. But
that's
like,
what I said. And she's like, no, it's really interesting. And I'm like, And Corey's like, I'll watch it.
Trying to get that pussy.
Exactly. But she's cucking him with long distance.
Ooh, can we say it? Wait, this is off podcast.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to cut this. I got to cut that. But, yeah.
But wait, is that still a thing?
So, yeah, she went to California and fucked her boyfriend. And she's from Georgia. It's not like she
went to Georgia. But is she still like sexing Corey?
I don't think so. I think she cut him off.
Cut and she
but then she's still hanging out with us, which is weird. And then also Corey's now hating her, and whenever she texts him like anything like that's nice or like, hey, how's your day going, he's like, God, look at what she fucking texted. And I'm like, whoa, dude, she's just trying to be a nice person. Like,
I don't know, but I kind of get it. Like, she,
no, I do.
Yeah.
It's a tough situation for everybody, but
it's weird that but also that he's hanging
like,
out.
Yeah, he plays into it too, because then he's like, oh, Charlie's coming over. And I'm like, oh, really? Like,
okay.
Like, right now. And
why am I, like, talking into the mic right
too.
Now?
Okay, back on podcast. So she mostly did a lot of book adaptations, which is interesting, and I'm glad she's a reader. I feel like Zack Snyder doesn't read books.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But, so, that's good. And she does it really well. Like, it's really hard to adapt a book to a movie.
Yeah, and she has such a unique voice too that it's like it's adding to whatever movie it's like adapting, I feel like.
Yeah, I definitely agree. She really gets like the core of it and like knows how to change it a little bit, I'm assuming. I haven't read the source material, but you've got to change shit when you make it into a movie.
Yeah.
And she does it really well.
You know what I just randomly thought about is that people listen to this podcast.
It creeps me out. I don't like to think about that. I just like thinking about that. I just
very clearly like realized. I'm like, who listens to this? I feel like in my mind,
nobody gets this far in.
That's the thing. Cause like, I feel like my parents might've watched like the first couple of episodes, but like who's listening to this right now?
No one.
No, but the stats say that like each of our podcasts now are getting like, you know, 15 listens. And that's like good. People listening to the whole thing.
All the way through?
I don't know. There's no way.
When I made like YouTube videos, it was like 30 seconds, like half the people were gone. And it was like really disheartening.
That's so mean.
And they were like 15 minute videos. But in Lynn Ramsey's work, a lot of it, places a heavy focus on like these main themes, the following: death, grief, from a human, a grief, guilt, and its aftermath.
Yes.
From a human perspective.
Yes, exactly.
Which I feel like I don't want to call it a feminine trait, but I think that it's I don't know what I'm saying.
Here's the thing. I think movies would be better if there were more female directors.
Of course. Because like the statistics are very disturbing, where it's like 90% of like the top 100 whatever are men. Mm-hmm. 90. And well, it's like, Jesus fuck. That's unjust and disgusting.
Might be like a problematic take. Well, not this. This might be a take that gets me a lot of hate.
Why?
But they're... Like, so in my white masculinity class, we talk about a lot about how, like, cishet white men, like, have a lot of trouble, like, being, or, like especially rich cishet white men have a lot of trouble, like, creating, like, narratives that, like, don't focus on, like, really superfluous things because they exist solely in a state of privilege. So it's like they don't have any of, like, the systemic hardship, like, and experiences of the systemic hardship that it like exists in this country, so they can't really talk to any like real struggle.
Yes, that was like exactly what I was trying to say, but you said it way better than I did. Yeah, I totally agree, and that's why it's such a relief to get like a foreign woman director who's telling great stories in a way that really resonates emotionally. Mm-hmm. And she's really in tune. She's in tune with that.
Very in tune.
Yeah.
What else we got?
And childhood. She focuses a lot on childhood in every one of her movies, really. Like, even in the ones I read about that I didn't watch.
Yeah, yeah. she also, like, especially in, and really interesting thing in Warburton Collar was the sound. But I think in all of her movies, there's like, she has a really good understanding of how like sound plays into a film, to where it's like you watch the movie and you're like, damn, the sound in this is really cool.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And you wrote this one down.
This is going to be a gushy podcast.
But it's so good because we've had a lot of hating podcasts this season. So it's going to be good to gush. But you wrote this one down, that she's really good with genre cliches and sort of like undermining them and like utilizing / sidestepping / transcending. How about that one?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I have something to say, but you don't ever really hear, but I'll wait until we get to that movie.
Okay. And lighting. We were talking about sound. I think lighting, whoever shoots these movies, oh, delicious.
Yeah.
Oh, they look so good.
No, and I keep wanting to bring up stuff about specific movies, but we'll get there, people.
Yes,
we'll get
yes.
there. And you wrote down, like, it's all visual exposition, which I think is a really great point. She's a very concise filmmaker.
Yes, yes.
So that's why I feel like it's the anti-Zack Snyder, because it's like everything is very to the point, and you get all of your information, like, visually, and it's like, it leaves you room to, like, really explore the topics, because you're not being, like, spoon-fed, like, all of these dialogue, spoon-fed all of this dialogue that, like, really like just gives you the plot, like you're on that journey with them.
Yes, and because I feel like film is such a visual medium, and then secondarily it's like a dialogue, like sound, like that, like I feel like plays are dialogue driven, but films have such a visual component that you can tell a story and get emotion across and details and a story across visually. And I think she does that amazingly and beautifully and concisely. And she edits. And an hour and 30 minutes. Beautiful. It's chef's kiss.
Amazing length for a movie.
Delicious. But let's get into some specific movies, shall we?
Yeah. So neither of us watched Ratcatcher, but it is Criterion, so you know
ooh.
It's good.
Ooh.
So yeah, I want to watch it.
You said the sound was good. What is that?
No,
what
that
was
in Morven Caller.
Oh.
I did watch Morven Caller.
Oh, okay.
I was just talking about
let's just move on to Ratcatcher, because we didn't watch it.
We didn't watch it.
What was it about? Do you know?
I started at like the first like 5 seconds and I'm like, wait, I'm going to watch the other one. I don't. There was like a kid, and that's all I remember.
Yeah, honestly, there you go. That's Ratcatcher. Anywho, what's the next one?
Morven Caller is like, it's about this woman who, like, on Christmas Day, her boyfriend kills himself.
Oof.
And so she cuts up and buries the body and then, like, goes on this, like, crazy like girl's adventure with her best friend. And it's like, so, like, a really, like, heartwarming story about her, like, not really heartwarming. That is not the right word whatsoever. But it was like, it's a kind of about friendship, like in a fucked up way. And it's like just her dealing with like the grief and like, but like also not telling her friend what happened. So like, yeah, I don't know. It was just a very, an exploration of this character, which I think is always really fun. This is also based on a book, but two things that were really cool about this movie is that the sound, I don't even know how to describe the effect, but there's like an effect on it in the entire movie that gives it like that really like hollow kind of sound. Like you're in like a tin can almost.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing. David Lynch does it too.
Yeah. I'm thinking of that movie, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, which I don't, anywho, talk about this one. Talk about
yeah,
this one.
Yeah. So that audio effect was like the entire way through it. You could tell the sound was all like very intentional. So like the sound was just really cool in that. And it was also shot on 35mm, which is very fun.
We love to see that. Well, it was Kevin and you were never really here shot. Would you know what those were? Let me look up what those were shot on. Really?
Yeah. Like Morven Caller was shot on like shitty 35mm.
I love
which is
shitty
so
35.
Good.
Like so many times you've seen, it's like, okay, 35, but then you see like torn up. I saw Taxi Driver on really shitty 35 and it was so, at the Coolidge Corner.
Ooh, I hope the Coolidge doesn't go under.
Oh, me neither. They keep sending me emails and I'm like, stop it. Just stop until you reopen.
Are they like are they looking like they're going to reopen?
I think so. They're okay, always good. Sending me shit. So I probably.
I'm getting my first vaccine this weekend.
Ooh, exciting, exciting. My mom is vaccinated. My grandma's getting vaccinated.
Excited. I'm going to Vermont Friday to get the vaccine and then come back and then I'll get my second one in like a month.
That's so exciting. That is so exciting.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get it.
The thing I'm going to do, like, because nothing in my life is really going to change once I'm vaccinated, because, like, I'm still going to probably not go to restaurants for a bit in the city or, like.
Corey keeps going to bars. Like, every week he goes to a bar.
Seriously?
Yeah. And I keep talking to him, and I'm like, Corey, what the fuck? Like, yesterday you went to this Beantown pub with this guy, and I was like, Corey, like, seriously, like you're the most COVID conscious person I know, and so that makes me mad about Corey. Shit on Corey podcast.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's warranted because it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's a no from me, Corey.
We're in a pandemic. So this says it was shot on film. We need to talk about Kevin shot on film. So
yeah. You can tell You Were Never Really Here was.
Yeah, and the anamorphics. That's really what catches my eye and that I wanted to talk about with as far as the cinematography was concerned is not so much the medium, because it does look really good, and the film, texture, ooh, delicious. But also, these anamorphic lenses, so delicious. The bokeh.
The bokeh, it was good bokeh, honestly.
Yeah, and she did a lot of good work with bokeh, because a lot of shots were just like all bokeh, and it was like, ooh, look at all that bokeh, or bokeh if you prefer that. But yeah, I thought both of these movies shot really, really well, and they were so much more beautiful than I was expecting, because I went into this and I had never really seen any of these movies, But I was thinking it was going to be okay. You know, it was going to be okay. But they were fucking gorgeous. Like, every shot. And each shot, like, told you something. Like, there were no unnecessary shots.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. And it's like, but they're also, like, beautiful shots, too. Though, like, both of the movies, or, like, all of her movies feel kind of slow because they're, like, you know, it's just the style. But all the shots are so interesting that it keeps you really engaged.
Yeah.
And everything feels very intentional, which is, like, so important.
Yeah. And I feel like the pacing is a lot better when you go that route of storytelling.
Yeah.
Because with a dialogue-driven film, it's so easy to tell, like, oh, this is act one, this is act two. Okay, we're going into act three. Okay, now this is the resolution. Mm-hmm. But with these movies, they're so visual, and they're so, especially we need to talk about Kevin, is so non-linear that it was really hard to tell sort of where you were in the mm-hmm. story, which it was even more engrossing. So, yeah.
We need to talk about Kevin next. Because I think that came before. You were not really.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right.
So, it's amazing.
So good.
So fucked
so
up.
So good. Oh, yeah. This movie fucked me up.
Yeah. It's like, hard to watch, kind of, but it's so worth watching. It's, like, I don't know. It is upsetting.
Yeah. Because, like, it makes you look at your life and be like,
yeah.
Oh, man. And will I be like that, like, as a parent?
Yeah, exactly.
Or was I like that as a child? And, like, it gets you thinking. It's like a mirror that's held up to your life.
One scene that sticks with me from that movie is the scene where, like, she walks in on Ezra Miller, like, jerking off, and then he, like, just jerks off harder, yeah! Like, staring at her, and
that
it's
was
like,
disturbing.
Holy
that
shit.
Was fucked up. That was, like, horror movie shit. Yeah. Like, that's not the part that's the mirror for me. I just want to clarify that. Yeah, that never happened to me. I'm going to cut that out. That seems way too, this movie's fucked up.
Yeah, I loved it. I think especially all the performances in this movie are Jesus Christ. They're all John C. Reilly does a fantastic job.
Yeah, I think you told me about this earlier in the season about how good John C. Reilly is as, like, a serious actor.
Yeah.
And this movie, like, boom, you convinced me.
Okay, because he was in The Lobster too. That was like the other great role.
And he was like a lead, I'm not a lead role, but a bigger role.
Yeah,
than The Lobster, I feel like.
A Joaquin Phoenix movie, too, is The Sisters Brothers. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. And
it's actually pretty good.
He's in that, too?
Yeah, it's on YouTube, and it's Joaquin Phoenix and John C. Reilly playing brothers in, like, the Gold Rush era.
Whoa.
And it's very good.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I love John C. Reilly now. And because he was in that Paul Thomas Anderson Magnolia. He was in Magnolia.
Oh, yeah.
Played the cop.
And he's Dr. Steve Brule, you know.
In what?
Did you ever watch Tim and Eric?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I haven't watched enough.
Yeah, he's like he's a recurring bit on there where he's like, I'm Dr. Steve. You really have to watch it.
That's like one of those things where it's like, I really, like, I want to watch it. I really wish I could watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to watch it. But I just haven't gotten around to it.
I love, like, really weird fucking, like, sketch shows like that.
Yeah, I love that.
Because I feel like Eric Andre's, like, got more mainstream a little bit.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a lot more random.
Yeah, it's like random things.
Yeah,
where it's like,
hey,
Tim
I'm
and
so
Eric's
crazy.
Just, like, like, really chaotic.
Yeah, and I feel like more well-written and more, like, mm-hmm. it's like, more of a bit instead of, like, Eric Andre's naked again. Oh.
Yeah, I feel like Eric Andre's just, like, chaos, where, like, Tim and Eric is more, like, like, they know something that you don't.
it's a different dynamic, for sure.
Also, like, Tim Heidecker, like, is just fully committing to the bit of, like, himself. Like, that's crazy.
Wait, that is he insane. Running for, like, Congress or something?
No, that's his character. He has a character that he also plays in real life. Like, he'll go to comedy shows as this character who's just, like, a huge fucking asshole. And, like, canonically, in the world of this character, like, went on trial for, like, manslaughter and, like...
What do you mean canonically? Is this real life in real life?
No, but it's not him. It's just like a character he plays out in the real world.
That's insane. And he's gotten lost in the bit. Has he gotten lost in it or is he maintaining
his
sanity?
He's maintaining his sanity, I think.
Wow.
But it's crazy. He does like a whole comedy special as this guy. And you can watch the trial of Tim Heidecker. It's like 4 hours and it's like, nothing's funny in it. That's the funny part is that there's nothing funny.
Is it a real trial?
It's like staged as a real trial. It's probably not a real judge.
That's absurd. That's really deep.
He's like, it's like avant-garde comedy.
Yeah, it's like, what do they call it? It's not augmented reality. It's like an ARG.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, I think Halo did it on Halo 2, where they were like, go to this payphone and like insert something or other. I don't really know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember talking about this kind of thing in like film history too.
Yeah.
Where it's like it's like a certain promotional technique.
Yeah.
It's called, it has a specific name, but I don't remember what it is.
I can't remember either. And honestly, like, it's a bit much.
It is a bit much, dude.
But I'm glad Tim Heidecker, of all people, he's the one who should
be doing it. But it's not like he's selling or promoting anything. He's just doing this, he's just like, doing it to, like, do, to it. Do it.
Well, I respect that hardcore. Then I'm for it.
Okay, back to, we need to talk about Kevin.
Amazing movie. Fucked Up Kid. So this movie is the spiritual successor to Rosemary's Baby.
Yes. Great way of putting
it. That's my take. That's my summary of the movie. That's my Roger Ebert. So, yeah, because Rosemary's Baby is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. Like, if not my favorite.
I love Rosemary's Baby.
It's so,
it's
good.
Also, like, it has, because I like horror movies with a bit of, like, ridiculousness and camp.
Oh, yeah.
And it definitely has that, too, which is, like, yeah, really fun. My favorite part of it is, like, the very end where, like, the old, like, very Jewish-coded woman, who's, like, the, I guess, the antagonist, sort of, she's, like, well, yeah, we had Satan and we wanted him to be out here, so we made a baby. And then the baby went in you, and now we have a Satan.
And it's just like all the people like hanging out in, yeah, that room, and they're like, hey, it's the Satan Club. But also that's horrifying at the same time. Yeah. Like, it's a new angle of horrifying where it's like, it's even more horrifying. Yeah, yeah. I love Rosemary's Baby and like the 60s aesthetic.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. And also it's a good like insane movie where it's like someone thinks, like, she thinks she's going insane and it's like the devil's in me. And then it really is. But nobody believes her.
Ezra Miller's a really good actor and he should like do more like serious, yes, roles like that.
Have you seen Perks of Being a Wallflower?
I go to Emerson. Of course I've seen Perks of Being a Wallflower.
That is one of my favorite coming of age movies.
I think that was like the funniest thing about coming to Emerson, because I feel like nobody I knew had seen that movie and all of a sudden everyone I knew had seen that movie.
That's such a great description of Emerson, honestly.
Everybody's really gay and depressed.
It's true. But it's a good movie, nevertheless. And yeah, so Ezra Miller, I agree, needs to do more serious acting work because he's really good.
Well, because he was in the Snyder Cut.
Oh no, who was he in the Snyder Cut?
And I guess Justice League too.
Who was he?
Flash.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh fuck! Get out of there.
It was really bad casting.
Get out of there.
Also, like, come on, buddy.
What are you doing? You had such potential.
I mean, he's making like a shit ton of money now.
Well,
probably,
of course, that's why he did it.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
But like, he's so good in this movie.
Yeah. And Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton's honestly like a treasure.
Oh, Tilda Swinton. Like, she pulled a Toni Collette here. Like,
she pulled a Toni Collette.
She surpassed Toni Collette, in
my
opinion.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know. I take it back.
Toni Collette and Hereditary.
Exactly. Like, but still, she's fucked up in this movie.
Yeah,
she's so good.
And
just like the way that like she feels paranoia and the way it's communicated to,
yes,
the audience is such like a straightforward yet like effective and like, oh, it gets under your skin so bad and it's so good.
And like, I was just, this movie is slow, but it's like I was hooked the entire way through.
Yes, very. Like, I, like, the only way it was like, it, yeah, it was, new, cut all that. the pacing in this movie, yeah, fuck. Yeah, I definitely agree. The pacing was slow, but every shot was like, every single second and moment was like so encapsulating and like,
yeah,
engrossing, and like it like dragged you on and like it got its hooks in you. And just when like one timeline or like one part in the timeline was getting like a little boring or like, it's kind of like, where are they going to go from here? Boom, it goes to the next timeline and it's like, it's in the future, and then it's in the past, and then it's in the future. But it doesn't do it It wasn't confusing to me at all. Corey's going to say, we're going to call Corey Mack for layman's hour later. And he's going to say it was confusing. And that's why, and that's because he was on his computer, his phone, and his Apple Watch the entire time. And he wasn't paying attention. And so I didn't think it was confusing because it was pretty clear.
It was
pretty clear.
We needed to talk about Kevin was her clearest movie for sure.
Absolutely. And Corey was asking all these clarifying questions. And I'm like, just watch the movie. And yeah. And she used a lot of great things to differentiate the timelines too, because it could have been really confusing. I don't get me wrong, it's a tough thing to do good.
Yeah.
And but the red paint, great bit.
Yes,
great bit.
The red motif is just
yes. And it's it's disturbing from the get-go, and it's a great tie-in.
Yeah,
visually, emotionally, and even just idea-wise.
Yeah. I haven't seen this movie in a while. I wish I would have rewatched it, but I remember there's a scene where she's walking towards the door, and it's her husband's dead out there. Yeah. But you don't know. Yeah. You haven't seen it happen.
It's like a tableau.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And because also it was the speaking of sound, the what's the grass water thing? The water sprinkler?
Oh,
the sprinkler.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the sprinkler noise, yes, that started the movie. It was that's what was fade in to, mm-hmm, sprinkler noise. And when she came into that tableau of the open door and the curtain, mm-hmm, which is such a beautiful moment to hang on.
But it's the darkness that awaits.
And she doesn't need to show you right away.
Exactly.
And that's what I love about her.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll talk about that, and You Were Never Really Here too, because I think that's also another important thing. But I think that in general, that's even with Morvern Caller too, it's you never see him kill himself. You don't see her cut the body up. It's all of these things are implied, and you don't need to be shown it, because the important part's the emotion surrounding the event rather than the event itself.
Yes.
And that's also why her movies don't deal with really sensitive stuff, but don't feel exploitative.
Yes.
Because dealing with sex trafficking and dealing with school shootings, obviously could, you could get into really shitty territory there. But she does it in a way that feels really honest.
Yeah.
And genuine.
Yeah. And especially I think we need to talk about Kevin was made in 2011.
Yeah.
Which is pretty early in the whole school shooting scheme of things. Columbine was in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, but I think that was before Sandy Hook.
Yeah, recently, 2013 on, I feel has been a lot of school shootings.
Yeah. And,
but this movie still, it's as relevant as ever, and as poignant and as well and subtly told as ever. I feel it hasn't aged out of the culture.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
It was a very tasteful take.
All of these feel very tasteful.
Yes, yes.
Anything more on We Need to Talk About Kevin?
Just that I think the ideas of motherhood and your relationship to your child and to your husband, and how that's a really vulnerable position. Of you're bringing this kid into the world, mm-hmm, and while you do have some control, you definitely have some control, at the end of the day, you never know what could go wrong.
Yeah, and it's definitely that feeling of not having control.
Yeah.
It's so scary, because it's because she's such a rational person.
And such a kind person, yeah, in the beginning, with the kid.
Yeah, and just her feeling this tide is working against her, even though,
yes,
she really tries. That's scary. Because, I don't know, our assumption generally is that everything's going to be, fair and just. You're a good, parent. You're going to raise a good kid. You're a good person. Good things will happen to you. And I think, it's a scary thought to think that that, isn't the case.
Yeah. It's a really horrifying thought. And that, like you said, we have no control.
Yeah.
And, even when she, goes to her husband and is, hey, this is what's going on. can you not see it? He's like, oh, you're crazy. He's friends with me, which,
yeah,
is so fucked up.
Yeah.
It's a really good movie, and I like it a lot.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those, you gotta watch it.
You gotta watch it.
And then You Were Never Really Here.
Great movie.
Fantastic.
I just watched it today.
Yeah.
Amazing movie.
Joaquin does a fantastic job. This is the anti-Joker, honestly, I gotta say.
Yes, and it's Joaquin Phoenix.
It's Joaquin Phoenix. It's about, like, somebody dejected from society. Somebody who, like, it lives with their mother and their mother dies. Somebody who has, like, a vendetta against, like, just against somebody. But, like, you know, like, it's, like, there's so many, like, similarities. And it's just... there's something there. There's something to it.
So here's my theory. Now that you've mentioned it, I thought about how he was so much better in this movie than the Joker, but there's so many connections that I never caught. Like, holy shit. So now my theory that I just came up with is that whoever directed the Joker, that fucker, he saw this movie with Joaquin Phoenix in it, loved it because it's an awesome movie, and said, I want to do that, but with the Joker.
Yeah.
Got Joaquin Phoenix, did the exact same thing, but did it way shittier.
Honestly, yeah. It was, like, I don't know. I guess Joker's, like, more of, like, an eccentric character. I say that word like that? But, like,
but it's true. He's like, ha, I'm crazy.
Whereas, like, I don't, Joe, and his name is Joe, right? Yeah. Joe
he's
is
just like such a reserved, normal, stoic. Yes, good word.
But, like, also, I feel like to some extent, this is like, because it's a revenge movie, which, like, I don't know, like, I kind of parallel to, like, Tarantino's stuff that, like, really glorifies the revenge genre. But, like, we said about, like, undermining genre, like, archetypes, like, I feel like this is, like, it kind of follows, like, that same rule of, like, the samurais and, like, the typical revenge plot and, like, this, like, warrior going to, like, fight for the innocent, like, that kind of thing. But, like, he's not really the hero. Like, he's a good person, and, like, we know he's the protagonist, but, like, he's got a lot of issues.
Yeah, he's kind of mean to his mom, even though he's taking care of her. Like, he's not a great guy. He's not a role model, for sure.
No, and he's, like, not stable.
No, he's fucked up. Everyone in that movie is fucked up, except for the kid, maybe. The kid's lonely.
The kid's pretty fucked up now, though.
Oh, yeah, well, the kid got fucked up. Yeah. Ugh. But yeah, I think it also, we talked about this earlier, its portrayal of sex trafficking was a very tasteful portrayal, not exploitive. And I think it told a very human story without, like, getting caught up in those genre cliches and camp. And because there was no camp in this movie,
there was, like, no camp.
Not a word to describe
campless.
This movie.
The shots are really cool. I think, like, the way it starts, especially where you don't see his face and it's just, like, all of the little things that he's doing, like, at the very beginning, like, that's a really cool way to open a movie. Amazing lighting. Like, the sound in this is also really cool because, like, there's, like, the high strings through, like, scenes that, like, you're like, why am I so tense right now? And it's just, like, it's just so good.
Yeah, I agree. And just like, and we need to talk about Kevin, like, just like in the first scene, it sidesteps so much, like, not so much, but I'm going to start that up. It sidesteps the direct violence, I feel like, a little bit, in some sense, where it's like, it's not, like, glorifying that, like, lots of blood and we're going to cut his head off. It's like, bam, we're not even going to really show it, and then it's over, and now we're walking through the house, and it's the tense, and it's, what is he thinking, what is he feeling, what's he going to do, how is he going to do this, what is going on?
No, and it's, like, it really, it feels like you don't need to see the violence,
no,
because
definitely.
That's not what it's about. There's, like, the scene, especially where he's, like, walking into that house, I think the one you're talking about, where it's, like, you never see him, like, actually kill any of the people, but you see him walk past their bodies sort of in the shot. Like, it's not really focused on, but, like, you know that he killed all those people, but...
And then, like, he cries afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a really, like, one of the best shots in the movie was, like, after he apparently kills someone and he's just, like, sitting and he's just like, oh, I've killed someone. He doesn't say that, but you know he's thinking that.
Yeah.
And he just starts crying, and, like, he takes off his shirt and is, like, fucking having a panic attack. And Yeah, and the portrayal of mental illness in all her movies is just
extremely
like incredible.
Tasteful.
Yes, absolutely. And like realistic.
Yeah.
And it makes you really empathize and like reflect on your own experience and say, you know what, I've had times in my life where I've been like that, mm-hmm. where I've been in a similar state of mind, and that it you know, it makes you like, it's a really powerful usage of art.
Yes.
Is to do that. And only really good art can do that. And this, both her movies do that extraordinarily.
No, I completely agree. And there's just like, I don't know. There was another scene that I thought was really cool. The one that where it was like all like him walking up the stairs and it's all like through like the security camera footage.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
With the song in the background, mm-hmm. the mismatch of a happy song and a sad image.
And then when he's like jumps into the water to like bury his mom, and then like, oh, that was a spoiler. Sorry, guys. Spoilers.
Oh, fuck you. We're spoiling this shit. It's too late.
But like when he's underwater, like
in
that shot. Yeah. Insanely good.
Oh, man. It's like a tableau.
Yeah. No, that
which
is
a
fantastic.
Word you said in the Lars von Trier podcast that I've now picked up on.
Yeah, like it's a good word.
Because I was editing the podcast today and I was like, tableau. Goddamn tableau.
Tableau, the tableaus.
And so great tableau.
Yeah, no, I love that shot. And like, I don't know, it just seems, it's like, I feel like the word perfect movie is overused and I don't think it exists. Yeah. But it's like, everything's done like extraordinarily well.
Yes, I definitely agree. And I would say it's good time, but like artsy.
Wait, oh, good. I confused good time and uncut gems. And I was like, I was like, it's really not like that.
No,
but I
good
totally
time,
get what you mean.
Because especially with like, she uses a lot of tight shots, not a lot of establishing shots. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of like go time. Like we got to go and urgent, violent crime, underbelly, but good. Like I feel like better because I feel like that's so much more of a genre movie. Good time.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing, like the flashbacks that she does in You Were Never Really Here are like really unique because they're so quick. Like you cannot pick up on what's happening, but like after you see all of them, it's like, okay, I have like a pretty good picture of what this was, but it's still like pretty ambiguous. Which I think is like more true to the way memory functions than like outright giving us a flashback that explains everything that happened.
Yeah.
And it's a way more interesting way of delivering that information because you're like giving the audience some space to like explore the idea on their own.
Absolutely. And it's like a flash and you get the emotion and you're like, bam, and then you're out. And it's perfect because like that's kind of how memory does function where it's just like, boom, emotion, bam, you don't really know what's going on. It's like, boom, you're feeling this, and it's similar to this situation, but it's trauma from your childhood. And yeah, trauma, I feel like, is a main point.
Oh, yeah, lots of trauma.
Yeah, and really all the movies.
Yeah, trauma's a big deal. But, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, like, trauma exists rampantly.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like not enough people are making movies about trauma. Like, people make movies about people inflicting trauma on people, but they don't explore the results of the trauma.
Yeah, the results of the trauma. That's a really good point.
But do you have anything else to say about You Were Never Really Here?
I don't think so.
I'm just going to say I liked it a lot.
I liked it a lot, too.
Joaquin, good for you.
Joaquin.
Wasn't his name really Leaf?
What?
Leaf Phoenix? What, isn't that his brother, maybe?
No, that's River.
Oh, River. Yeah, his name was Leaf. And then he changed it to Joaquin.
Joaquin Phoenix is like he's had a sad life. He's experienced a lot of trauma.
What happened to him?
River Phoenix died like at a young age, but they were both like, they both had like really bad like substance abuse problems and like were like had some like, I don't know, I don't remember quite what it was, but it was like bad like family situation with his dad or something.
Oh man.
Cause I mean, they're both child actors, like that fucks with you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's kind of digging into that in these movies.
Yeah.
Cause he did a good ass job in You Were Never Really Here.
No, I respect him a lot as an actor. I think
me too. Less like, after Joker, but still.
Yeah, Joker wasn't. I think he's also like he's kind of losing it. Remember, like the award season that he was like kind of in prominently, and it's probably for Joker, but he just kept going off on like crazy rants and shit.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate to see.
It's sad. It's really sad. But he's good in this movie.
Yeah, and in Her's great.
I've only seen clips of Her.
Her's good.
I want to see it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's really good.
Spike Jones? I just get Spike Lee and Spike Jones mixed up.
We should do it on Spike Jones.
And Spike Lee, why not? But I don't really like a lot of
Spike
Lee.
Didn't we not do it on Spike Lee? I thought we did.
No, definitely not. Because I haven't seen any. Well, I saw Black Klansman and part of Da Five Bloods. And
The Five Bloods,
not good. Don't watch it. It's not worth it.
What's the first movie he did?
Like Do the Right Thing?
Do the Right Thing. Yeah, I've seen that.
I haven't, but I want to. Heard it's good. Yeah. I've heard it's really good.
I've just seen Do the Right Thing and Black Klansman.
Yeah, I've seen Black Klansman. It was really good.
Oh, and he did like an American version of Old Boy.
Really?
Yeah.
I think one of the... Who shot that movie? Because I know we talked about the American Old Boy and like... two podcasts ago. Maybe Sean Bobbitt. Did Sean Bobbitt shoot the American Old Boy?
Oh, I don't know.
Let me Google. 2013. You can just hear us furiously typing. Sean Bobbitt. Yes, he shot all of Steve McQueen's shit. So, there
Josh
you go.
Josh Brolin was the lead in the American Old Boy. It's horrible casting. They shouldn't have made an American Old Boy.
The Korean one is fine. You leave it alone.
Yeah.
Like, really?
That's
why
what makes me
mad
when they just,
adaptation?
Like, do, like, remakes and, or, like, any, just, like, any, yeah, just remakes in general
and
of
it's,
good movies.
It's, like, it's good on its own. Like, they made a good thing. Now make a new good thing.
Exactly.
Why make a shitty thing out of a good thing that then, it doesn't ruin the old thing, but it sure takes it down a notch.
No, you're absolutely right.
But yeah, Stella, what's your objective best of?
I think
actually, Lynn Ramsey?
Well, we need to talk about Kevin. Might be the objective best, but I like You Were Never Really Here more.
I'm gonna say that You Were Never Really Here was a more fun movie to watch. But I feel like We Need to Talk About Kevin was my objective best.
I think it is the objective best. The objective best. But I've enjoyed You Were Never Really Here more.
I would concur, but I'm going to say Kevin just for contrarian's sake.
Yes, that's fair.
Thank you. But what's your worst?
I said Morvern Caller because I like the other ones more, but like I think... Morvern Caller is still really good. It's just less of like an intense movie, I guess.
Yeah, they're all very intense movies.
Yeah.
Both of them.
So I don't. It's just kind of on like a different like. It's apples and oranges.
I get you.
Morvern Caller is like a lot more personal, and it's like a lot more like raw. And I feel like Ratcatcher is probably the same, where it's just like it's very like intimate and like gritty.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Ratcatcher is my least favorite. Because I haven't seen it.
good call on that.
Thanks. But yeah, it seems good. It seems personal. Seems like the same up the same lane of the other two. So I'm sure it was pretty good.
So what do you think she's trying to tell us overall?
So I think she's diving in to mental illness, trauma, death, grief, guilt. I think all of these things play an integral part in sort of the stock, the soup that the stew that she's cooking up in this movie. Because I feel like while all her movies like really emotionally cut deeply, I feel like they're all pretty different at the same time. But I definitely feel like. Like Charlie Kaufman, where she's exploring her own psyche and her own shit that's going on in her life and that everyone deals with. And so, yeah, also trauma.
No, you're totally. Lots of trauma. As we've stated, she goes into some trauma.
Yes.
So I think another big part of it is like there, because... Again, with like the undercutting like genre norms, I think that there's like a tendency in a lot of media to like glorify pain because so many movies portray pain because it's like a more interesting I mean, if everything was going perfectly in a movie, then there would be conflict and then it wouldn't be a movie. Mm-hmm. But like, really, that kind of results in a lot of movies, like portraying pain in a way that it like, it improves your narrative or like makes you stronger or like that it makes you a better person, like all of this. Bless you. It's okay. But I think that it's just really interesting because I think what she's really doing is like kind of undercutting that and being like these people experience pain and made their pain worse, like almost, because it's like kind of this like cycle of cycle's not the right word. But like, I don't know, just this general aura of like pain begets more pain. And like, this isn't something to be like celebrated, I guess.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And yeah, it's definitely an anti-celebration. Cause I definitely, it's like the same thing with like war movies or any type of movie with like, and violence in general, is that it's fun to watch and it's hard to sort of not condone it when you're making a movie about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, cause you have to make an exciting movie. But Lynn Ramsey makes an exciting movie that does dive into the like you said, that pain begets more pain. That's a good quote.
I mean, like, she made like an action movie and like a horror movie that are just kind of about feelings.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
Yeah, I love it. Feelings. Like, not enough directors take advantage of the feelings, because obviously all movies like do that, and like, it's like, you know, it's what's going on. But Lynn Ramsey is so tuned in to that lane of like cutting deeply into your feelings and really digging in there.
Yeah.
She's a good digger.
Good digger. That sounds, I don't like that.
I might cut that one.
I didn't like that. That was a hard R.
But, yeah. That's what I think she's trying to tell us emotionally.
No, I completely agree. So
do you have any, like, cool or disturbing or even demonic fun facts?
I do indeed. I don't know about the demonic part, but so one thing that there's honestly not a lot about her on the internet, like we said, but the one thing I did find in an interview, she said that when directing, actually Joaquin Phoenix said about her, she didn't like say that she does this, but like when directing, she'll like physically put herself in the same position as the character by like doing the same blocking that the actor's doing and stuff. So like, it's like method directing.
That's acting, awesome. Directing. Method acting sucks. Method directing it's is badass.
Literally. Like, so when like Joaquin Phoenix was like in like the water, like she went in there too.
Whoa, that's really
and, like,
cool.
She, like in the opening scene, like she'd pick up the hammer, just like feel the weight of it, to like put her in the same headspace as the character.
I love that so much.
Yeah, that's so sick, dude.
Because then that comes across in every department then that you deal with.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I respect that so much.
Yeah, I respect the hell
out of
like that.
That's like the anti-Lars von Trier.
Yeah. I was thinking about this because I feel like we say that somebody's the anti-someone all the time, but like she is kind of the anti-Lars von Trier.
Absolutely. And because she's a woman.
Yeah. Well, they're both like doing movies about feelings, but yes, she does it better.
She does it so much better. Yes. And I agree with that. And that's a good
like,
fact.
She, like, I don't know. Like, You Were Never Really Here is a really depressing movie. It didn't make me more depressed. It didn't make me feel bad.
No, me neither. It kind of made me feel bad, but you need to talk about Kevin really made me feel bad.
Yeah, that did too.
But wow, that's so interesting.
But
that
not
she
like
actually,
melancholia bad.
No, because that was actually like this guy's fucked up worldview.
Yeah, exactly.
And like bad dialogue and like really kind of overdramatic. But here it was really toned, like the tone. Tone.
The tone.
We're just going to say like adjectives like that.
Just talk about the valence.
Yes, it has chutzpah.
use the term valence in like papers for Dina Lee.
Valence? What does valence even mean?
I don't know. It was a catch gene. You're going to have to cut all of this out. But
so I've heard of valence electrons.
No, remember it was like overall valence, dark to positive.
Okay. So dark to positive valence?
I think it's just like the tone of the movie, like whether
from
it's
dark
like,
to positive?
Yeah, but that's a completely guess. I don't know what that means.
Well, I'll try it in my reading reflection that's due on Tuesday.
Yeah, anyway.
So upcoming. Now, this is interesting.
This is interesting.
Because I also read this and was about to paste it in, and then I saw you already pasted it in. But she is... So actually, there's two unnamed movies in production. Mm-hmm. One of them I don't know, but
there's
one
like
of
another
them.
One that like I didn't include because it wasn't. Yeah. I think it might have been a short film or like something that wasn't quite as interesting.
But the interesting one is a sci-fi, and what I read in the article said it's a metaphysical.
Whoa.
version of get this Moby Dick.
Interesting.
Which wouldn't be that? Wouldn't that be so awesome to get Lynn Ramsey on a Moby Dick movie?
Should have been on The Lovely Bones.
I feel like Moby Dick is more of a literature classic no, than it is. Lovely Bones.
I'm just pissed about that one because I feel like if she did it, it would have been really good.
Yeah, because Steven Spielberg fucking snatched up the rights and fired her.
No, we're breaking our rule and it's okay because this is insulting him.
He's the bad guy.
Yeah.
So what the fuck, Steven?
Yeah, and then the only thing that could sound cooler than that is an epic environmental horror film that Ooh. She's also doing, which, like, love it.
I love that. It's probably got, like, nature and pollution and humans, but a good human, and then, I don't know, or maybe no good humans, and maybe nature is the protagonist.
Yo.
So these are our thoughts for you, Lynn Ramsey, if you made it this far in the podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Our listeners that maybe exist. Thank you, Lynn Ramsey, for this.
I think we should do that really at the end of the podcast of the good directors. We say, that's good. Thank you, Lynn Ramsey.
Should we wrap up with Layman's Hour? I completely forgot.
Oh, I forgot about Layman's Hour, too. We were on
the end
roll.
Of a podcast.
Yeah,
because like
it's a good like taper. Hey, Corey Mack. You're on Layman's Hour with Corey Mack.
Is that what you're calling my segment now?
Yeah.
Because you're a normal guy.
I am a layman. Yeah.
So we're talking about this movie called You Need to Talk About Kevin.
We
need to talk about him. So we need to talk about what you think about We Need to Talk About Kevin.
What I think about We Need to Talk About Kevin, I thought it was a pretty good movie.
Wait, that's a funny bit.
Which bit? That it's a good movie?
The bit that every time you come on, you say, it was a pretty good movie.
Even at like Justice League or Zack Snyder. Okay, so what did you like? What did you like and what did you dislike?
What did I like? I liked kind of the storylines a little bit. My issue with that, though, was how they jumped around so much.
You didn't like that, the non-linear part?
I did not like the non-linear part.
What was it? Were you confused?
I was quite confused, yeah. It was, it went very back and forth. It threw me off way too much, and the fact that John C. Reilly was in it did not help at all.
You did not? Hang on. You didn't like John C. Reilly in this movie?
No, I like John C. Reilly. I just don't like John C. Reilly in this movie.
Oh, what?
Fuck you. This was like his best film.
He did so good in this movie.
No, Step Brothers is his best film. Okay?
Oh my God.
You're like my fucking shop teacher in high school.
What can I say?
He thought Step Brothers were the, it was the best movie of all time.
It's not the best movie of all time. It's a great movie though.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on We Need to Talk About Kevin?
My one-liner is we need to talk about the jump cuts in this movie. Fucking Christ, that shit jumped around way too much. I'm tired of it. I don't like it. Make it linear.
Wait. What's a jump cut?
The fucking thing where they just go back and forth doing the bit. I don't know.
I don't know if that's called a jump cut.
Remember, I'm a layman.
Layman teaching hours. That's not a jump cut, but it's okay. It's good enough. We get what you're talking about. What's your two-liner?
Spoiler alert. They never talk about Kevin.
Oh, it's true. They don't.
They don't talk about him.
They avoid that.
Well, they do at like one point. They do a little bit.
But then
bit.
He overhears and he's like, I am the context. Which is a good line.
That's a good line.
But
it is a good one-liner.
You got an ocean liner?
I do have an ocean liner. I have the SS City of Paris launched in 1888.
No. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, just a couple, like a it's okay.
What? You said come prepared with an ocean liner.
No, I meant like you know, it's like a phrase where it's like a one-liner is a, like one sentence. A two-liner is like two sentences or
and then
two thoughts.
An ocean liner is a whole bit.
It's multiple. It's like your intelligent opinion about what the movie we watched. But,
I'm not giving you an intelligent opinion. I'm giving you a history.
Well, we love to hear it. We love
yeah.
to hear it. Thank you for the ocean liner. What year was it launched?
It was launched in 1888.
Oh, that's an old one. Thank you for your good name. Layman's hour.
That was a good layman's hour.
We're going to have to let you go.
Corey Mack.
So thank you, Corey. And I'll
good
see you
next time. Bye, Corey.
Bye. So he thinks a jump cut is when you jump between timelines.
Let him have this one.
Exactly. I didn't want to correct him, but there you go. That's Layman's Hour with Corey Mack, my roommate and best friend.
Aw. So that's probably it for today, folks.
Yeah.
Again, if you've made it this far, congratulations.
Thank you.
You get a prize and it's nothing. So you get our Instagram handles. Take that. So if you want more content like this, follow pods.emerson on Instagram and pods.emerson on Twitter for updates on our show and shows like ours.
Oh, and follow me on Instagram at f_Instagram, G-R-A-H-A-M, and you can see my photography. But other than that, that's about all we have for you today.
Oh, yeah, follow me on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
At stella.deary.wss.
So there you go.
So there you go.
You can be our friends.
Yeah, sure.
So,
all of our Seattle listeners.
And the Russian ones.
Yeah.
And like Brazilian. I love those statistics.
It's so fun, dude.
But we're going to have to say goodbye. So, bye.
I realized I counted up, not down.
You like counting or just doing fingers at me.